From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Ghost Hunters with John Kachuba. So get ready for that. Hey, I met actor Richard Belzer tonight, Law & Order fame, and his wonderful family tonight. They are all Coast to Coast listeners. As a matter of fact, his daughter Jessica met her husband Tim because of the program. See, I knew we were matchmakers. Here's what's happening. Officials in a popular stretch of coastal North Carolina, they've ordered all visitors to evacuate ahead of Hurricane Irene, which damaged homes in the Bahamas as it churned toward the U.S. East Coast. Irene, with maximum sustained winds now of 120 miles an hour, could jump to Category 4 strength. That's pretty darn big by Thursday, according to the National Hurricane Center. Federal emergency management officials have a simple message for those in or near the path. Be prepared. And, you know, after being rattled by Tuesday's earthquake, the Northeast is bracing for another rare natural phenomenon, the first hurricane to make landfall in New England since 1991's Hurricane Bob. An earthquake rumbled on. Severe weather threatens on Thursday. Hurricane Irene will unleash its flooding rain and damaging winds this weekend. And Irene could strike the southern New England area during the late afternoon or evening hours of Sunday. And that 5.8 magnitude earthquake that surprised the U.S. East Coast with the biggest shake since 1988 may be followed by more aftershocks for weeks, according to scientists. A 4.2 magnitude follow-up struck about 6 hours after the main one. While serious damage from aftershocks is unlikely, you get a pretty good jolt, according to those experts. And a 7.0 magnitude earthquake struck a remote Amazon region of Peru. Cal Ori, author, intuitive, and predicts earthquakes. Cal, what's going on with this planet these days? It seems to be all over the place.
Yeah, it's really exciting. All within, 24 hours? You know what's really exciting, though, is that if you look at these quakes, it started off with Colorado, 5.3, Virginia, 5.8, Sierra, 4.2, Bay Area, 3.9, 3.5. They're all on the same latitude, 37, the same line. How eerie is that?
What's that mean?
That means that we're next. I'm betting on California. We're going to have a significant quake. That 5.8, I mean, yeah, it was felt in 22 states. I'm not going to downplay it by any means, but I'm talking about a major quake like a 7.0 in California, which Californians know we have had and we can get, and we are way overdue.
When's the next full moon, Cal?
Well, I think it's the new moon is on the 29th.
Ah, okay.
But, you know, quakes sometimes happen outside of the lunar cycles. Even though I'm an advocate of Jim Berkland, obviously, I wrote
sure.
a book on him, they can happen anytime. I'm betting on before the year is out, we will have a 7.0 in California.
Well, that's big. What's new with your website, calori.com?
A whole lot's going on there. Just go there and you'll see how busy I've been with the Healing Powers books and the quake predictions and the hurricane. I actually predicted that we would get a hurricane. I said that it would be a Category 5, but it looks like it could be a 4. I did predict that, for the season, right about right now. So this one doesn't surprise me at all.
Here we go. Hold on, everybody. Just simply hold on. Libyan rebels have announced an amnesty for anyone within Colonel Muammar Gaddafi's inner circle who captures or kills him with a $1.7 million reward. Gaddafi's whereabouts unknown, though rebels have said that they think he is still in or around Tripoli. Greg Hunter, USAWatchdog.com. Where is he, Greg? What do you think?
I think he's somewhere around the country. Who would take him? But, his 42-year reign is over. But I think it's the big story is what is next?
That's right.
They have 1 in 5 are unemployed. They have 1/3 are under the age of 15 years of age. Half are under 30. They've got $37 billion frozen up around the globe. And I got to tell you, I want to come back to this story about Libyan rebels and Al-Qaeda links. And then just before I went on the air here last hour or so, I found references in the Telegraph, CBS, Fox News, Washington Times, Reuters, Huffington Post, LA Times, all had stories about Libyan rebels with Al Qaeda links. Even one of their major leaders was in fighting in Afghanistan. He was arrested. He was taken into custody by the United States, and then he was later released in Libya in 2008. And I think that's very weird. I think what's next for the country is it going to be a democracy? Is it going to be a theocracy? Is it going to is Al Qaeda? Do we just give Al Qaeda influenced or Al Qaeda a country? I don't know, but I don't feel all warm and tingly about it. That's for sure.
Well, I sure hope we've learned lessons from Afghanistan and Iraq, Greg, where when you go in and you topple a government, it's going to take a long, long time to fix that country.
Well, who has the money for that? That's the very tenuous position the world is in. I mean, there's by some accounts, it's going to take nearly $2 trillion to fix the banks, the sovereign debt, or to get control of the sovereign debt crisis in Europe. We have tremendous problems here in the U.S. It's so bad, George. They changed the accounting rules to make the banks appear solvent. That's the truth.
A little flip of the old pen, huh?
That's unbelievable.
It's your anniversary, the 2nd of USAWatchdog.com. Congratulations.
2 years. Today, 2 years, I put my first post up. I spent like four or five, six hours in these posts. And I think I had three people read it. And I thought, oh, boy, this is going to be a long slog. Well, this month I'm up to 170,000 people. In a month, I know you guys get a couple of million people a night. But anyway, but I'm still working, and things are good. And I get to bring up really good points, and I get to say the truth, and I get to be on your show, and that's fantastic.
You've got that new sound blood in you, Greg, don't you?
I do. I just like telling the truth.
That's the bottom line. Greg Hunter, his website, USAWatchdog.com, 2nd anniversary. Pop the champagne. The end of an era came this evening when Steve Jobs stepped down as CEO of Apple. Tim Cook, who has filled in for Jobs twice during medical-related leaves of absence, including the current one, has been named as his replacement. Jobs expressed his desire to remain as chairman of Apple's board. Shares of Apple overnight have already dropped 5% with the news. They'll go back up. Steve Jobs has been battling huge health problems of late. We wish him well. An unmanned freighter launched to the International Space Station has simply been lost. The Russian space agency said the cargo ship was not placed in a correct orbit by its rocket, fell back to good old planet Earth. Listen to a couple of these stories. In 1986, a Japanese Airlines pilot saw what he described as an unidentified flying object over Alaska, closely tailing his 747. He made an evasive move. His career was thrown into turmoil, but he never recanted what he claimed he saw. In 1987, a Federal Aviation Administration executive says the CIA warned him not to talk about UFOs because you would panic. In 1997, former Arizona Governor Fife Symington and guest on Coast to Coast AM mocked thousands of people who said they saw mysterious lights over Phoenix, calling out a staffer dressed in a ET costume at a press conference. 10 years later, he apologized for lying to the media and the public. He's now convinced it was extraterrestrial origin. Up next, Lee Spiegel joins us as we talk about his latest article in the Huffington Post. Get ready for this story as the History Channel puts the strongest UFO evidence under the microscope. And welcome back. I'm George Norrie, and here's one of our coast-to-coast friends, Lee Spiegel, writer-reporter. He researches and presents the unexplained and the paranormal. Now, following ABC News, Lee joined the Weird News team at AOL News. He now writes for the Huffington Post. They're all together now, and here he is on Coast to Coast. Lee, how have you been?
Great, George. Always good to talk to you. And you know, you mentioned Richard Belzer at the top of the show.
Yeah.
Richard was responsible for the very first radio job I ever had in New York City on NBC. I used to come on every night to do UFO reports, and he got me the job.
He's a great guy.
Yes, he is.
Great. We had some fun tonight. He came in to dinner. We had dinner at our local place down the street, the old Great Greek Restaurant. Good people. Uh-huh. And he brought a little puppy in, and then he brought his daughter and her new husband,
of a couple of years, and we had a great time. And we'll probably get him on the show again. You know, he's written books about UFOs and JFK, and he's quite the guy.
Yeah, he's very interested in the whole UFO conspiracy theory thing and has been for many years.
Now, talking about UFOs, you've written a great article about the History Channel, which really has been doing a bang-up job covering UFO stories. I mean, they carry Ancient Aliens, which I've been on for 3 years now. They are really involved in this. Why are they so serious about this?
Well, for this particular show, and it premieres tomorrow night, and it's a two-hour special, and I thought, well, that was pretty interesting that they're going to spend 2 hours on this. And so I spoke to Julian Hobbs, the executive producer for the History Channel. I said, why are you guys doing a two-hour special on UFOs? And he basically said, the History Channel doesn't believe or disbelieve in UFOs, but what they're doing is presenting compelling material, as they have done for many years, on UFOs. But it was in this case, what caught their eye was Leslie Kane's book.
Yes.
And he said he read the book, and he was so compelled with not only with Leslie and her investigative reporting, but the fact that there is 95% of all UFO sightings that can be easily explained and dismissed, but there's that leftover residue of 5% that haven't been explained, and 5% may not sound like much, but when you think about all the numbers of UFO reports, suddenly it's a big number.
Well, I had a guy on the air years ago, a guest, and we were talking about crop formations late.
Yeah.
And he said almost all of them are man-made.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all of them, George, are phony. And I said, you said almost. Why didn't you say all of them? He said, well, some of them could be real. And, you know, Lee, all it takes is one UFO, one real crop formation made from some source from beyond this planet. That's all you need.
Yeah, and I've been saying for decades that it only takes one real photograph. And you have to go back to the days before there was Photoshop and digital processing.
That's right.
Let's go back to the 1950s when people only had their Brownie cameras and they weren't tossing up hubcaps into the sky, and they were photographing things that even the government couldn't completely explain away. You have to go back pretty far in history to get those genuine photographs, but just because they're 50 or 60 years old doesn't mean they're not credible.
You know, my webmaster, Lex, he was posting a little picture of my brand-new number 6 grandchild, little Charlotte.
Congratulations.
And Lex, being the clever one that he is, and you talk about Photoshop and apps and everything else that is available, he put her inside of a little egg. She's in a little tiny broken egg, and she looks like a little baby chicken. And I guess you can do wonderful things with Photoshop these days. In the old days, there were incredible UFO pictures, Lee, and they were real pictures. I mean, somebody may have thrown something in the sky, but there was no Photoshop in those days.
That's right. And one of the final things that viewers will see in the History Channel special, well, I've seen the movie. I went and saw it on Monday with Leslie Kane in New York. We saw a screening of it. And it's a two-hour, very fast-paced, slickly produced, wonderful presentation. And I don't think I'm giving anything away by saying this. But at the end of the presentation, they bring on special effects wizard Douglas Trumbull, who did all the effects for Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and he did effects for 2001: A Space Odyssey, and he actually sits down at a computer and shows how things can be manipulated on a computer screen, and they showed one image. Or a sequence that shows several UFOs flying around an area with their palm trees, and he stops the image and he says, if you notice these two palm trees, these are the exact same palm tree, the one on the left and one on the right, and whoever put this together just superimposed one, copy and pasted it to the other side because they're exactly the same.
It's sadly, Lee, the day after you and Leslie participated in that, her dear friend Bud Hopkins died at the age of 80 years old.
Yes, and I knew Bud many years ago. He was the man, as you know, he pretty much put the whole concept of missing time on the map.
He sure did. Tell me a little bit more about Lee Spiegel. What have you been doing these days with Huffington?
Well, I've suddenly become the UFO writer. It's
like, and I love the fact that they let you do that.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? It really is. That like a mainstream news organization like Huffington Post is pretty much saying, go ahead and write what you want to write. Just don't say anything that could get us into any trouble legally. But there's so much news out there now. And just this UFO special on the History Channel has given me like a wealth of information to draw upon. In the last week, I've interviewed like six different people that are all featured on the show. And talk about just credibility, you know, coming out in every direction, which is what this subject poorly needs or sorely needs.
As a news person, Lee, this is what drove me into the field. I wanted to get answers to these subjects. As a news person, the fact that you interview these people and you come away with the feeling that, you know what, they're telling me the truth. They're not making this stuff up. What do you think about all this now?
Well, you know, there's a word that's bandied around a lot, as you know, the word disclosure.
Yeah.
You know, people are always saying, well, when is the UFO disclosure finally going to happen? Who's going to disclose it? That's a big question, too. I mean, is it any one nation that's going to come out and say, yes, we're being visited by someone? And yet there are many people out there, and I happen to agree that the whole idea of disclosure has actually been going on for decades. And it's like right in front of us, and people aren't really noticing it. And that's part of the problem. People expect that either the United States government or the United Nations will make some kind of formal announcement that we're being visited. But that hasn't happened, and it probably won't happen, because I tried to get it to happen in 1978 at the United Nations. And nothing has actually come out formally. I don't think it will, because as our mutual friend Stan Friedman likes to say, nationality is the name of the game around the world, and no individual country or leader wants to let their citizenship know that there are other people flying around in the skies who we should probably really be looking up to and paying attention to.
What do you think of the incredible Rendlesham Forest incident in which, what do we have, 50 military eyewitnesses here?
There were at least 50, yes, according to Colonel Charles Holt, who was right in the middle of the whole thing. I mean, he was there at the Rendlesham Forest, where there's a joint United States and NATO air bases out there. And this was at the end of 1980, when all of these military personnel were out in the fields watching a variety of UFOs of every possible shape and configuration. There were circular ones. There were triangular ones. They were flying around in the air. They were shooting beams of light down at their feet. They were landing. They were darting around, doing things, maneuvering around in ways that no conventional aircraft could do that. And it's been an amazing story. Skeptics, of course, have tried to explain it away by saying that all that they saw was a lighthouse in the distance, which is so laughable. Because obviously it wasn't a lighthouse. There was so much more going on there. But Charles Holt, like I said, he was at the center of this. And I first interviewed him 15 years ago. I went to his home in Oklahoma City when he was still in the Air Force, and he very reluctantly talked with me about what may have happened out there at Rendlesham. And he wasn't really very forthcoming. And then a few months ago...
He is now.
He is. And just before he appeared at the National Press Club in Washington with other former military officials, I called him again, and he was just like completely opened up with what he saw. And I finally said, so Chuck, because now he went from Colonel Hall to Chuck.
Chuck.
I said, so Chuck, when I first interviewed you 15 years ago, you weren't as open as you were today. Why is that? And he said, are you kidding? If I had talked with you then about what I'm saying to you now, it would have been a career killer. And that's
so
a big
true.
Part of the problem.
So true. Well, you were just writing about the Japanese airline pilot who was, making evasive maneuvers.
Yeah. And what's amazing about that story, George, is this took place in November of 1986. It was a cargo plane, a 747. Only had, I think, a three-member crew, and they encountered over Alaska this gigantic UFO, and they asked for radar confirmation in Anchorage, and not only Anchorage, but they were told that the local military radar also was sending back or getting primary targets on radar, and they actually asked the pilot to make a 360-degree turn to try and evade the UFO. And he did, and then he couldn't see it anymore, but then he was told by radar the thing was in back of him.
Let's talk more, Lee, and we'll take some phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, John Kachuba joins us, ghost hunters on the trail of mediums, dowsers, and spirit seekers. So get ready for that. When we come back, more with Lee Spiegel and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Lee, I like the fact that you did the story of former Arizona Governor Fife Symington, who's been on our program. He, back in 1997, he did. He mocked the Phoenix Lights. He mocked the people who saw this object or series of objects. He had somebody at a press conference come out in an E.T. costume.
Right.
And 10 years later, he recanted it all.
Well, because people were very angry with him, and it lasted a decade. And you know, finally the story came out that on the night of March 13th, 1997, he was at home with his wife, I guess in the governor's mansion, because he was a two-term governor and he was still in charge of the state. And they were watching television, and the news was crawling across the TV that there were reports of strange lights over the Phoenix area. He had already sent his security detail home. He was just at home alone, and he said to his wife, "I'm going into the car. I'm going to check it out myself." And she told him to be careful. And so he went out there expecting to see maybe something in the distance when this thing, this huge boomerang-shaped object, silently went over his head. And it completely blew him away. And he decided right then and there he couldn't talk about it and that he wouldn't talk about it because of his position as the governor of the state. And it took almost 3 months before the news of the Phoenix Lights actually made national headlines. And so there was such an uproar for an explanation that that's when he held this press conference and brought his chief of staff out dressed as a handcuffed alien. And that made things even worse.
It backfired on.
Oh, yeah, completely. He was totally ridiculed for years. And then he finally, I think Leslie Kane actually broke the story 10 years later. And he basically said, after being confronted by so many good citizens who were upset with him, he finally understood, and then he just fessed up and came clean, and he had to do it. When I asked him last week if there's some kind of a taboo about elected officials talking about UFOs, he said, yes, if you're an elected official and you hold a high public office, then the minute you start talking about UFOs or extraterrestrials or anything of that nature, the media immediately tees off and ridicules it. He said that he often refers to the media culture in our country as the culture of ridicule. He says everybody reaches for their ridicule guns first before they seriously address the issue when it comes to UFOs.
Well, can you imagine, for example, what would happen to President Barack Obama as we're getting squeezed with the economy and we've got the situation in Libya and all these other problems that we have? If he came out today and said that he's called for an investigation on UFOs, people would just run him out of the White House.
Yeah. And the people who would be mostly responsible for that, George, I think, would be the media. You know, people like you and me.
Oh, I wouldn't.
Well, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, we're in the media. And Symington said to me, if you're an elected official, you need to be careful about what you say because the media can totally destroy your credibility.
How many elected officials have come into office talking about UFOs and then stopped talking about it right away,
Sure. Never
brought it back up again?
Yeah, well, the first name that comes to mind is, of course, Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter was one. Ronald Reagan was one. Bill Clinton sent John Podesta loose to try to find out what was going on?
That's right. And in fact, John Podesta, I think he was Clinton's chief of staff. Podesta eventually wrote the foreword to Leslie Kane's book.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. Let's take some calls here, Lee.
Okay.
We'll go to Frank in Ann Arbor, Michigan, east of the Rockies. Hey, Frank, go ahead.
Oh, wow, George. My question for your guest is, why don't the UFOs, as our technology gets better, it seems like the UFOs get better looking. Why don't they look the same as they did 50 years ago, these silver discs and maybe cigar-shaped? It seems to me as if they should have started looking more advanced like we see them now 50 years ago. And why is it that they, as our technology gets better, why do the UFOs start getting better looking? Why don't they look the same as 50 years ago?
Well, that's a very good question, Frank. I remember the late Dr. J. Allen Hynek used to say, people are not reporting flying pink elephants around the sky, around the world. What they are reporting are various shapes of circular, cigar-shaped, and now the more recent triangular-shaped objects. Frank, I'm not sure if anybody knows the real reason why certain different kinds of ships are being seen, but here's one thing to consider. George and I once talked about this 1968 Air Force Academy document about UFOs, mm-hmm. in which the Air Force explained to their cadets in this textbook, and they very, very, very completely laid it out to the cadets, basically saying, we think that UFO reports have been around for 50,000 years, and we're stimulated by the idea that we may be getting visited by three or four different groups of extraterrestrials at different stages of development. And so when you take a statement like that, well, maybe these different groups of extraterrestrials have different kinds of ships.
Yeah, that was a handbook for them. It was a training guide, wasn't it?
It was a textbook. It was for the Department of Physics. The book was called Introductory Space Science, and the chapter 33 was simply Unidentified Flying Objects. And this chapter first appeared in the textbook in 1968, just before the end of Project Blue Book, which was terminated in 69, early 70. And when early copies of the chapter started to leak, well, they took the chapter out because, you know, why would they want to keep that in there to let the public know that here's what we're really telling the cadets behind the scenes, even though we're telling you there's nothing about UFOs that's worth any kind of scientific, you know, significance.
Let's go to Dallas, Texas. First-time caller Steve's with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Steve.
Thank you, George.
Sure.
I have a question as far as disclosure. Why don't we, as Coast to Coast listeners, all get together and do a mass consciousness experiment and all decide that or however you would want to put it, a UFO would appear one place altogether, like over Washington. That might blow the lid off of it.
Or at least try to communicate with them in mass. I don't know. What do you think of mass consciousness, Lee?
Well, I think that if enough people get together and apply their energies, their mentals, psychic energies to something, I believe that yes, there's some evidence that things can materialize. That maybe that's the wrong word. I think that there's great power in numbers, but I'm not sure if that would work in a case like this, because I think what people tend to forget, George and Steve, is that we're not just talking about something that's flying around in our skies and whether one government or another government or all governments are going to say something about it. Let's not forget that whoever it is that's operating these things, the truly unexplained ones, we don't know what their agenda is, because obviously they could just show up wherever they want, and they do, but they haven't just shown themselves en masse everywhere. So there's got to be a reason why. Maybe they really don't want to have anything to do with us.
Lee, after interviewing so many witnesses tied into this field, what are you coming away with? What's your gut telling you?
Well, my gut tells me, even before I saw this triangular-shaped object in 1975, which was amazing.
Yeah.
Even before that, I was believing the accounts of people. I used to read, when I was a kid, George, I was reading books by Major Donald Kehoe.
The nightcap head.
Nightcap head, and he was, talk about being the first whistleblower. He was out there talking about and writing about how pilots, commercial pilots, military pilots, were chasing these things, were seeing them. Some of them were being shot down because they were shooting at UFOs, and the UFOs shot back. And I remember all the way back when I was a kid, it occurred to me that there was something going on, and it might be possibly a hostile thing to all of us living on Earth, but nobody seemed to have the answers, or nobody wanted to tell us what the truth was. The truth has always been something that we've never really been given on so many levels, but especially things like UFOs.
Let's go to Illinois, Palos Hills, Illinois. Ed's turn. Go ahead, Ed.
Hi, George. Yeah, hi. I was working in 06 at O'Hara. I worked
at
a ramp at Continental. Listen, the thing is, I seen it. I seen the saucer. Okay, so I was sort of scared at first, but you know, I got over it because nobody got it. We didn't get attacked by it, you know. But the politicians don't want us to know about it because they want us to pay attention to them. Okay.
And I think what Ed is referring to for the rest of the folks is that in 2006, it was 2006, I believe, right?
Yeah.
That over a section of O'Hare International Airport in Chicago, a circular disc just suddenly appeared, and it was hovering over one of the areas there, and apparently a variety of people saw it, and then it when it took off, it went straight up in the air, and it went through a cloud so fast that it cut like a circle into the cloud as it went up, and then it was gone. Now, Ed, did you see it when it left like that?
He has hung up.
Oh, he has hung up.
Yeah.
But a lot of people did see it, and so you know, George, on the History Channel special tomorrow, they're doing a great recreation of this event, and it's really startling.
It really is.
Oh, yeah.
There's just all kinds of great stories out
yeah.
there. We'll go next to Long Beach, California. It's Sam's turn on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Sam.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
It's you know, I never really believed in them too much. I always thought kind of, you know, whatever people want to believe. And then, but, you know, I never thought there was no way. I go out to my car. I have neuropathy. And I go out to my car, and I'm sitting in it about 2:30 or 3. And I'm sitting there, and the windows roll down, and I just had this feeling, and I looked out the window, and you know, like the beginning scene of Star Wars where they're going, and then the big triangle that just like never ends is following them.
Right.
It looked like that gigantic triangle. I mean, it just huge. And it looked like it was low. It was making no noise. It had some lights around the outer rims that were different colors, but it was headed straight for like where the Long Beach Airport was. And real quick in my head, I didn't even think, whoa, it's outer space. I kind of thought, you know, this is like, what are they doing now? You know, with the stealth aircraft and all that stuff they had hid. What are they doing now? They kind of know it's here with all the, you know, they're right next to an airport where F-18s fly in and out of every weekend. And I'm going, you know, what's going on with this? And it just went real slow over towards the airport. I live in Long Beach, and it was headed like northeast, north by northeast, headed that way, right, exactly towards the airport. And those big, giant Douglas hangars, I know they're there, but they're not being used to produce those giant C-17s no more. So things started kind of wandering in my head, what's going on, you know?
A lot of people have wondered about that, Lee.
Yeah, it's a very valid point because we're living in an age now of the stealth bomber. And, you know, so many people are quick to say, well, it must be some new Air Force or secret military aircraft that they're testing and developing out at Area 51 in the desert there. But the questions are, you know, do we have technology that can hover and move silently above you, literally making no sound, that can stop on a dime, that can suddenly perform a 90-degree angle turn and then instantly speed off at blazing speeds? Do any of our stealth technology weapons have the ability to do that?
See, even if we did, Lee, how in the heck could we hide one of these huge triangular-shaped objects?
Yeah.
They're too big.
Yeah, I mean, the descriptions of them are, you hear a mile across. You hear, you know, several football fields across. I mean, just gigantic. That's kind of replaced the old mothership description of them. But whatever these things are, there are too many accounts from too many credible eyewitnesses, and you know, we kind of hope, my hope is that the skeptics and the debunkers will kind of loosen up a little bit, cut a little bit of slack to really credible eyewitnesses, because this ridicule thing has to stop.
It sure does. Let's go to Greenville, South Carolina. Alexander, welcome to Coast. Let's hope that Irene stays out of your way. Go ahead, Alexander.
Oh, yeah, right.
Judge Norrie?
Yes, sir.
You were asking about the incident of the Brooklyn Bridge in New York City when Dag Hammarskjöld was the Secretary General of the United Nations.
Yes.
Well, I used to live in New York. I lived on Oceanside in New York, on Long Island. And the four people that had witnessed that thing was two police officers on one pier in under the bridge. There was another car on the far side, which was from the United Nations, and the woman driving across the bridge going into New York City to pick up her husband. She witnessed it too. The light above the bridge, the woman from her apartment was jettisoned across the Atlantic, across the East River, up over the Brooklyn Bridge, down into the river, back up over the bridge, and back to her apartment.
That was her name was, I think, Linda.
Her name was Rosemary Azzanato.
Okay, we didn't hear her name before. Bud Hopkins didn't have that. It was an incredible story.
Yeah, and another thing is,
yeah, go ahead, Alex.
I had the UFO land on Long Island. I signaled the craft, a dash, and two dots. The craft hesitated for a few minutes, and then all of automatically, in the center of the craft, there was an egg-shaped dome, and it went on and off, on and off, on and off.
It was signaling.
In an amber color. What's that? It changed in colors from bluish white, bluish green, reddish orange, and brightish white amber. Another thing is, they had the insignia, like Lonnie Zamora, that I saw in 1952.
He was the New York police officer from Socorro, New Mexico.
Right. That's right. And the insignia was a half moon with a V, like an arrow, and a line underneath that arrow was the insignia.
That's a great story. Lee, do you think we're ever going to really get the answer?
Oh, I think so, George. I really hope that it happens in my lifetime, but I'll tell you, to be honest, I hope mostly that it happens in Stan Friedman's lifetime, because he deserves to see the truth.
He does. He does. And, you know, all these guys are getting so old, they're getting up there in age. Yeah. They're not around to see the truth.
I know, and I think that's probably one of the things that the government or the governments are kind of counting on is, at this point, how many people are still alive who were involved with the Roswell encounter? Not very many. And so as those voices leave us, it kind of has to be turned over to someone else. But who else is there to take on or to carry on the legacy of a lot of
That's
people?
Right. And by the way, I think the head of the UN at the time, Hemisher, was way before. It was Perez de Cuellar, wasn't it?
I forget what the year it was. Do you know the year of that?
It was in 91, maybe.
Oh, okay. I don't recall. You're probably right, though. Yeah, it's a bizarre story. But again, skeptics will very quickly jump on it and say, well, why would UFOs appear over a major metropolitan area? Well, gee, they do. Look at Phoenix.
You know what? If we've been visited since the beginning of time,
right,
if they have genetically altered us, which is a possibility,
right,
of course they're coming back. It's easy to come back. You know, if we jump-started a civilization here by 1,000 years or 1,000,000 years, we'd be doing the same thing.
Right, and we wouldn't necessarily want to just keep showing ourselves. We would want to kind of take a closer look at how the experiment is going.
Exactly. Well, Lee, good luck. Take care of yourself. Lee, of course, writes for the Huffington Post, and he was writing about the History Channel special on secret access UFOs, which will be on Thursday night. So you just keep your eyes open for your own local time. I'll be back in a moment. Ghost hunting on Coast to Coast AM.